The preceding portion of the California Report was brought to you by the Casper World Folk Festival, August 5th and 6th, and of course, our many members. This is KZYX 90.7 FM in Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, KZYX and Z on the World Wide Web, kzyx.org. And it's now time for Education Now. Education Now is being brought to you tonight by the Mendocino Book Company and, of course, our members. Mendocino Book Company is on School Street in downtown Ukiah, a full-service resource for books, including special orders, children's books, newspapers, and magazines. Open Monday through Saturday till 5:30 and Thursday till 8, 468-5940. And also, it is brought to you in part by our members and our underwriters at KZYX and Z. Underwriting sponsorships are available now to benefit your business and events while supporting great community radio. Showcase your business to over 10,000 plus listeners per day in support of intelligent and innovative radio programming. 895-9617. And now let's get to Education Now.
Must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by. Feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they
Well, good evening. This is Athena Melville, and I'm so happy to be with you again this evening on Education Now. This evening at 7:15, a very special person named Maureen Kelly is going to be calling us. Maureen is the director of an amazing nursery school in St. Helena. It's the St. Helena Co-op Nursery School. And it's a fantastic model, and so she'll be calling us about 7:15, and I'm so delighted. But I want to tie up some loose ends, and first of all, I want to read to you from the Alliance for Childhood, a call to action on the education of young children. We are deeply concerned that current trends in early education, fueled by political pressure, are leading to an emphasis on unproven methods of academic instruction and unreliable standardized testing that can undermine learning and damage young children's healthy development. Many states are moving toward universal preschool so that all children can benefit from early education. We strongly support these efforts, provided that preschool programs are based on well-established knowledge of how children learn and how to lay a foundation for lifelong learning, not on educational fads. We call for early education that emphasizes experiential, hands-on activities, open-ended, creative play, and caring human relationships. Preschool education must not follow the same path that has led kindergartens toward intense academic instruction with little or no time for child-initiated learning. If such practices were effective for 5-year-olds, we would have seen better long-term results by now. We call for a reversal of the pushing down of the curriculum that has transformed kindergarten into de facto first grade. Education is not a race where the prize goes to the one who finishes first. To help young children develop literacy and a lifelong love of learning, we need to respect and, when needed, to strengthen their individual abilities and drive to learn. Instead, current trends in early education policy and practice heighten pressure and stress in children's lives, which contribute to behavioral problems and learning problems. We call for research on the causes of increased levels of anger, misbehavior, and school expulsion among young children. Justified concern for low-income children, who often lag academically, has been a powerful force behind the current overemphasis on early instruction in literacy and math. This well-intentioned but misguided policy may actually put children in increased risk of school failure by denying them positive early learning experiences. We call for additional research that examines the long-term impact of different preschool and kindergarten practices on children from diverse backgrounds. Creative play that children can control is central to their physical, emotional, and cognitive growth. It contributes greatly to their language development, social skills, and problem-solving capacities, and lays an essential foundation for later academic learning. Yet many children do not have the opportunity to develop their capacity for socio-dramatic play. Preschool is the place to intervene and restore childhood play. We call for teacher education that emphasizes the full development of the child, including the importance of play, nurtures children's innate love of learning, and supports teachers' own capacity for creative autonomy and integrity. This is prepared by the Alliance for Childhood, a partnership of educators, healthcare professionals, researchers, and other childhood advocates who are working together to improve the health and well-being of all children. This statement has been endorsed by the following individuals. Organizations are included for identification purposes only. And here's just a small sample of who signed. John Almos, President of the Alliance for Childhood, Paul Ammon, Director of the Developmental Teacher Education Program, Barbara Beatty, Chair Department of Education, Wesley College, Marilyn R. Benott, MD, past President of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, T. Barry Brazelton, MD, Professor of Pediatrics, Emeritus, Michael Brody, MD, Child Psychiatrist, Virginia Casper, Assistant Dean of the School of Education in New York City, Renata M. Cooper, Commissioner of the First Five Los Angeles, of course, Dr. William Crane, Professor of Psychology at the City College of New York, David L. Kind, Professor of Child Development, Tufts University, Howard Gardner, Hobbs Professor of Cognitive and Education, Harvard University, Dr. Jane Goodall, Founder Jane Goodall Institute, Arlington, Virginia, Jonathan Kozal, Author, Bayfield, Massachusetts, Vivian Gussie Pally, Teacher and Writer in Chicago, Bruce D. Perry, M.D., Senior Fellow, Child Trauma Academy, Houston, Texas. Of course, Alfie Cohen, and so many, 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 many more healthcare professionals, psychologists, teachers, and professionals who have signed this. You can sign it, too, by going to thealliancechildhood.org. That's the Alliance for Childhood. You could also check out the campaign for a commercial-free childhood at CCFC at bcc.harvard.edu. Both the campaign for a commercial-free childhood and the Alliance for Childhood are working tirelessly to get back the power to parents and caregivers and professionals of children instead of the political arm of our country. Well, I promised you tonight in my promotion that we would be tying up some loose ends. I wanted to bring up William Crane's fifth edition of Theories of Development. Crane was our first guest on Education Now, and I can't emphasize enough how important I feel it is for people to read this book, especially the fifth edition, because now there isn't any question from all of the research that Rousseau was right, that the child is propelled from promptings inside. You know, a child is not empty. We don't fill them up, and they're born free. You can take that freedom away from them, but everyone is born free, which is just... So I strongly encourage you to get William Crane's fifth edition of Theories of Development. It's a great asset. Every person that he covers in Theories of Development, he gives you a sketch of their lives as well as their theory, and tells you, as far as today's research, just where that fits in. It's just a classic, and the fifth edition is amazing. Pardon me. The very important thing about learning styles and the senses. Now, Jung theorized that there were different learning styles, and that thinking was a function of the eyes and feeling. And by that, he didn't mean touchy-feely. He meant judgment, you know, good, bad, was a function of the ears, of hearing. And sensation function, of course, is taste, touch, and, you know, the sensation function. And then intuition was a function of the nose, of smell. And so that then he also talked about extroverted and introverted, and perceiving and judging. And this is an issue that I want to cover with you at some length in the future, because it's very important. There's the Myers-Briggs type indicator, which can help you determine where you fit, you know, in that. But Jung was very careful, and this work shouldn't be used lightly, but you can almost tell yourself, really. That's what's exciting about it. And it helps if a child, if someone is learning, getting a great deal of information from their eyes and not so much from their ears, then how to refine the senses that aren't taking in the information as readily, and also how to present information to the child that is learning through particular senses so that they can excel. Had to cough there. Now, Jung and Campbell did a great deal of work on mythology and its connection to psychology, and this is another area that we're going to cover a great deal in the future. Psychology and mythology was the core of a school that I directed for a number of years, and I felt that we felt it was so important, because the mythology is what a lot of people call religion. But if you come from a particular background, it's important that you get information on the roots of that background. And so the mythology of all of the cultures of the world are studied. And when that happens, you see that they're all the same, which is what Campbell discovered, which was extraordinarily beautiful. And Campbell tells a wonderful story about in the 60s, people coming up to the north, he says, you know, bringing a lot like in the Grail, when Parsifal's mother took him into the woods so he would never know of any violence, he said. And so, you know, of course, in the 60s, they took them up there, you know, into Marin and Mendocino County, and where they wouldn't know any violence, but by instinct, they made those weapons. And so that's going to be a hot topic, I'm sure, and we'll go into it. And of course, the arts, psychology, mythology, and the arts. And the arts for Jung, really Sabina Spilrin, a fabulous woman from Russia who died during the Second World War, really led Jung to this, that the arts are a container for all of our repressed thoughts and feelings, and that great art sees the future. And so we'll be talking a lot about that in programs to come. I didn't push the cough button, but I'll try to remember to do that in the future for sure. You know, we've had Alfie Cohen and William Crane and Art Costa and Betsy Coe, and tonight we're going to have Maureen Kelly. Now, I don't know why, but just synchronistically, all these ka-ka-kas come up. But I'm also going to be talking to you in August, a report on the award-winning Palo Alto schools, which of course are public schools, and just how that manages to function that way. And in September, we're going to focus on media literacy, critical thinking skills, and the Alliance for Media Literacy, and I'm going to have a guest here or are on the phone on media literacy. And then Jonathan Kozol in the future, and bonding and infants, some amazing research. And then funding, is it possible with public school funding to create a model environment? And I have some guests that I'll be bringing you around that. And I really do welcome your feedback. And I would like you to send your feedback to me at Hermes, that's H-E-R-M-E-S, at pacific.net. You can check me out at pacificsites.com/TildaHermes. And you can mail me questions or feedback, care of KZYX, at P.O. Box 1, Philo, California, 95466. Well, I think that's Maureen now. Hold on. Hello?
Hi.
Hello, Maureen?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Zena.
I want to check your levels. Hi, Maureen.
Okay.
I want to be sure our levels are just right here.
Okay.
Okay, will you speak?
Okay. How are you tonight?
Okay, talk again.
Okay, hi, Athena, how are you?
I'm all right, Maureen. It sounds like it's working just fine.
Okay, good.
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Maureen.
You're welcome.
I wanted to read the philosophy of the St. Helena Cooperative Nursery School. Children learn through play. Our program emphasizes the development of the whole child through social interaction, multi-sensory activities, and active parent involvement. The St. Helena Cooperative Nursery School is licensed by the State of California Community Care Licensing Division. We are also a member of the California Council of Parent Participating Nursery Schools and are proud to be accredited by the National Association for the Education of Young People. We welcome families of all cultures, religions, races, and ethnic backgrounds. We are a parent-run, non-profit organization. Wow.
That's us.
And the school started in 66, right?
Yeah, 1966.
But then you became the director in 92.
Yes, I became a teacher in 1991 and a director in 1992.
And had your sons, because you have two sons, Cole and Wade, but they went to the school before you started teaching.
Right. Cole started there about 18 years ago, and then Wade followed after him. And I was the teacher in the afternoon class when Wade was having his last year there, so there was 1 year of overlap where I was teacher and parent.
Right. Now, could you describe the environment, the indoor environment first?
Well, the building was built in 1888, so the indoor environment has a cubby room that was the old foyer of the building, and then you come into a very large room, and it has a housekeeping area and dress-up, and then there's a little room off to the side that's the library with pillows and chairs and lots of books, and there's a whole block area and a circle time rug and a music area, and then in the corners where we have a dramatic play that we change 18 times a year, and that's connected to different things we do on field trips and things like that. And then you go into the next room, and there's an area where there's all the table toys and a science area and a Play-Doh table and an art table and cooking. The kids cook every day. And then there's an open art table that just has lots of different art supplies and things where the kids can do whatever art project they want there.
Yes,
And there's a little writing table, too.
Yes, it's so beautiful. And all hardwood floors.
Yep.
And it was renovated when?
Well, we slowly kind of take on different projects each year. And a few years back, we redid all the electricity, and it had some lights in there that were put in the 50s that were long baluster lights, and we replaced them all with the old original schoolhouse pole lights. And so now whenever we do anything to the school, we are doing renovation back to the time period. And a few years ago, we redid the roof, so we just keep doing things as needed to the school.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
And so big and and wonderful. And the outdoor space. Now, did you tell us the square feet of the indoor space?
You know, I don't actually know that right off the top of my head.
I think I read on the website it's about 4,500 square feet.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's a very large space.
Yes.
For the kids. And then the outside of the building is a classic schoolhouse with a little bell on top and a big wooden front porch and the sign built in 1888. And when it's a child's birthday, they get to ring the bell for how many years old they are, one to grow on.
And outside now, when I've been there, there's a garden area, and there's free water play, which is...
We don't have a sand box. We have a sand pile, and it's about 10 feet wide and about 5 feet tall, 4 feet, 5 feet tall, depending on how much it's been played. And then we have two different hoses, and the kids can bring hoses over to the sand pile to play. And there's swing sets, and there's a water bed on the ground, and the kids can jump and roll and play on that. And carpentry shed, and a bike track. And the bike shed was built by a child that went to the co-op, and he did it for his Eagle Scout project. So he came back and built the bicycle shed for us.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Now, what's the student faculty ratio?
There are 17 children to 5 adults in the classroom, and 2 of the adults are teachers and 3 are parents. So the ratio is 17 to 5.
And is it a morning and then afternoon, different children come in the morning and then in the afternoon?
Yes, there's different classes. So there's a Monday, Wednesday afternoon class, a Tuesday, Thursday morning class, a Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning class, and then there's a Saturday play group, and the children in that program are toddlers. And in that program, it's 17 kids to 18 adults because each child has a parent that stays with them.
That's so wonderful. And so the... it's a very low student-faculty ratio, and the ages are from 2.5 to 5, or 2.
That's right.
So it's a broad age range.
They're all the weekday classes are all mixed ages. The Saturday program is the only single-age program, and those kids are all toddlers.
Right. Now, there are so many remarkable things. I want to just... But before we leave the space, the remarkable space, now, because it's a co-op, you guys have this amazing monthly rent. What is the monthly rent?
It's $110 a month.
Oh, isn't that...
and then we, along with that, is we do all the maintenance ourselves. Mm-hmm. We pay for all of the upkeep ourselves. So the things like the lights and the roof is part of what we consider our rent. But for me, it's being great stewards for that wonderful old building.
Yes. Yeah. And then how much does a parent who participates in the program pay a month?
Next year, I think it's $135 a month.
Uh-huh.
And then the 40% or more of our budget is our yearly fundraiser, and we have a wine auction, silent and live. And that one evening, we raised last year, I think, $135,000.
Wow.
And so the community of St. Helena is very generous to the school and to the children, and so that's how we really keep ourselves going, through that fundraiser every year. And then each parent has a responsibility to the fundraiser, and that's how we do it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, could you talk a bit about the values and goals for parents?
Well, the values and goals for parents, for me, it's largely keeping parents in a partnership with us, and that's what the word cooperative is we're cooperating all together for the benefit of these children. And one of the goals I love the best about the co-op is it really teaches children to be advocates for education and for their children. And part of what the parents learn is being with other parents and creating their own community of friends that they'll be raising their children with, and understanding child growth and being able to share ideas with teachers and other parents, and what to expect from your preschooler, and you know, what it means to be a 3- and 4- and 5-year-old in a community.
Right. And how about values and goals for the children?
You know, before we move on from the parents, I wanted to share with you that last year when I had 5 parents graduating from the school that had been with me a long time, and they got together and wrote up a list of what they learned at the co-op.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
The goals for the parents that I was just telling you about are my goals, but it was so fun for me to get to read what they had gotten from spending their years with me. And the very top thing on their list was let wonder happen, and plenty is enough, and recycle, reduce, reuse. And they had play in big capital letters. So that was quite a tribute to the school and myself to have these parents take the time to write that list.
Well, I know
that was what the parents felt their goals that were met were.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that great?
It is great. But you are a treasure
to
the community of St. Helena.
Thanks.
And I mean, how many generations are you Napa Valley? Fourth generation Napa Valley?
I'm sixth.
Sixth generation Napa Valley.
Don't ask me what year that was. I can't remember, but I've been here a long time.
I know, and the community loves you, and people are going to, I'm sure, getting a feeling why already, but they're going to get more. Now I know that the teachers are teacher-designed activities that facilitate learning through play. So you design the activities that facilitate the learning.
Mm-hmm.
But then the adults, the parents who participate in the program are there watching, right? And then you might tell them how to help out.
Right. And what I do is each month I write up a curriculum for that month, and I call it the plan of possibilities. I call it that because it will possibly change depending on what comes from the children. But part of what happens is I usually am the one that does that with the kids and follows their interests and leads. And when the parents come in, they know who's doing cooking, and that parent has brought in the food. And then when they come in the morning, I ask them if they would like to do art or if they'd like to be at science or dramatic play. And once they pick where they're going to be, I walk over and go over the activity with them so that they really know what's expected of them, which makes them more comfortable in the classroom. But I can also say things to them like, you know, don't create a model for the kids, or let them explore this as long as they want. If they need more paper, offer more paper, so that the parents are learning how I think the kids should be treated, and then the kids get the experience of it being pretty quality.
Right. The other thing that I just love is the integrated dramatic play, which is missing in so many schools. You know, it's just beautiful to see all of the costumes and the sometimes fire engines and a house. It just, you know, it just reminded me of my own experience, and I've not seen a lot of classrooms like that. I want you to know that, preschool classes like that. And then field trips that teach children about their community. Can you give some examples of the kinds of field trips that you do?
Well, one, often they are connected to the dramatic play. So in February, I set up a post office in the school. And when I set these things up, they stay up for weeks so that kids have a lot of time to explore them. And a lot of kids in the beginning all go in at once. And then as the weeks go by, you know, it's fewer kids. And I think the play changes a lot with that. And so around that time, we also make Valentines for all the kids to send home to their parents. So we go to the post office, and they each buy their own stamp and mail their card and then have a tour of the post office. And another dramatic play that we set up is a hospital, and then the ambulance comes to the school, and the kids get to explore the ambulance and have the paramedics come in and talk to them. And we have in the past, we always set up a bakery, and I give them 50 pounds of flour and a little counter where they get to order and Play-Doh in there and stuff, and we've taken them to a bakery. And we also set up a fire station with a burning building, which is a climber. And the local fire station gave us a lot of their old equipment. And then we take them to the fire station, and the firefighters let them squirt the hoses and look at the fire station. So that's how the dramatic play is weaved into the community.
Yes,
too.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm going to give a little station ID. This is KZYXNZ and Education Now. And we're talking to Maureen Kelly from the St. Helena Cooperative Nursery School. Well, now I wanted you to talk about the food pantry and how that works. It's so wonderful to see children that age engaged in the giving. Could you talk about that?
Yes. What we do is we start in November, and we collect food for a whole month. And what I also do is I connect this food connection all to collection, all to math. So in November, when the kids come, there's a large stack of paper bags that have no numbers on them. And all month we fill up the bags and then write big numbers on each bag as we fill it up. So that's one-to-one correspondence for the kids. So when they collect 50 bags of food, there's 50 bags of food in the corner. And then we collect rice, and we keep track of how many pounds of rice we bring in and weigh all the children, and then add up how much each class weighs, and they have lots of scales that they get to weigh around the classroom. And the food pantry comes with their truck to the school, and the kids help them load it onto the truck. And we also collect soup and do a number line, peanut butter and jelly, and learn to count by fives, and collect cereal and do addition. And, you know, they collect, I think, 400 cans of soup this last year. So when you come into the co-op, there's always large piles of food around.
And that's given to the food pantry.
Right.
And each month is something different.
Right. And each math that they do is different with it. So when they're learning the math, they get to learn it every day for a month. It's not something that's just taught to them abstract. They get to
there's a concrete
for a long time, and they get to see it and feel it and have ownership to it and then load it in the truck. And then the food pantry writes some letters back thanking them. And one of the things that we also do besides the food pantry is collect money to buy a goat.
Yes.
For Heifer International.
Yes, this I wanted you to talk about.
Okay. And so the kids learn about money, and they all go out and they earn the money with their families and their relatives. And then they we buy a goat. And Heifer International has been around since 1944. And it helps families lift themselves from hunger and poverty by empowering them, by giving them animals. And it can be chickens or bees or goats. And then part of that gift with Heifer International is that they need to pass the gift on. So once somebody has some goats, one family does, then their job is also to make sure their neighbor eventually gets some. And they do trainings in each community. So the kids collect money and buy a goat, and the goal for that is $120. And this last year, they collected $150. So then we talk about all the other animals, and we narrow it down to about five, and they get to vote on what else we would spend our money on. So they get a little lesson in voting.
Yes,
in
our little civics lesson.
Yeah. And really, whoever gets the most votes wins.
I noticed in the times that I've observed there that there are so many signs of the children learning to give. Mm-hmm. And of course, the focus is play, which is just what we were talking about. That's really the basis for the children. And you can find schools like that, but this most remarkable thing for me is the way that the parents earn credit. Could you talk about what exactly is expected of the parent and what the parent does when they get involved with the school?
When the parents sign up for the school, they enroll their children in the co-op, and the co-op is run by parents, a board of directors, along with myself. And then one of the requirements for the parents is that they sign up for the adult ed program that's through the district. So our local school district hires a parent ed teacher, and every parent on their first year at the co-op takes a 12-hour parenting class. And then all of the parents all year long are required to come to monthly meetings, eight a year. And during those meetings, they're also signed up, that's being signed up for a second class, a parent ed class. And that's a time as the parents come together to take care of co-op business and then meet with their classroom teachers, and then we always have a guest speaker for an hour each month. And so the parents are actually in classes that the district have signed them up for. So both are students.
That's right.
Yes.
And that's so remarkable. You're empowering the parents so that they will become the best possible guides possible for their own children.
And one of the things that I have noticed over the years is after the parents leave the co-op and I am going to fundraisers or reading about them in the paper, that very often it's a co-op parent that goes out into these other schools and takes on these positions or gets on the school site council or starts alternative programs and stuff. So I think that what parents learn very much is that they can make a difference in their child's education.
Right. It's so different than this dropping them off and picking them up, because they get in, not only are they learning, but they're getting involved with the parents and with their child's process. It's just wonderful, an amazing environment that you've created, Maureen. Was that happening before you took over directing?
I think the parent ed program has always been a part of it, and what's happened over the years, and certainly since I've been there, is the quality of speakers is higher. And I often read a new book or something and then ask the parent advisor to bring that person to our town as a speaker. And then one of the things that is different that I've done is when we have speakers like that, I invite all the other nursery schools and preschools in town and the elementary school.
That's
and
just where I was going.
Oh.
So go there.
And PUC College and the college students and Napa College students. And so I believe that it's has become more informative and more professional over the years. And I believe that's a difference. The structure of the co-op and what I do with it is what a lot of co-op nursery schools look like. I believe that one of the things I do that's different is really work with the parents to work with kids in a way that I know is very much developmentally appropriate for that child. So I guide the parents so it's best practices with the kids instead of parents just maybe getting to do whatever they want. And I think that's what looks a little bit different than how it used to look, too.
Uh-huh.
I have pretty high standards in how people...
Yes, you do.
Yes,
which I approve of, totally.
Yeah, it's good for everybody.
So now let's go backward to the values and goals for the child. Making a positive bridge from home to school. What a great goal that is. Mm-hmm. Something every child needs. To feel secure with adults other than the child's parents. To experience community. To learn to get along with others. To share equipment and adult attention. To learn positive ways of communicating with others. To exhibit growth of verbal expression. I certainly saw a lot of that when I was there. To explore and manipulate a variety of creative materials, and to recognize and appreciate beauty in materials found and used in nature. Do you really feel that other nursery schools that you've observed have as much free choice as you're offering the students there?
I don't think they do.
No, I don't either.
I think that it comes from a place of really trusting children to succeed. Rich environment, and trusting yourself as a teacher to set up that environment and guide them. And I think that a lot of teachers feel more comfortable if they have more control over the room. And so they want kids at certain tables at certain times, and then at 15-minute intervals, they might move to the next table.
Right.
And I don't think that serves kids very well, because some kids are going to want to spend much more time there, and what they're learning is not to follow their passion and interest. And other kids can be done in a very short amount of time, and then if somebody requires them to stay at the table, you're creating adult behavior problems there. I mean the child behavior problems adult impose on the child. And, you know, sometimes the co-op does look a little bit chaotic, but if you really just sit back and watch an individual child or a group of kids, you can see that they're all very engaged. And when parents say to me, "Oh, it's noisy in here," I say, "You know, that's joyful noise, or that's busy noise, or go outside for a while, come back in." But it's not about you; it's about them. So
right.
And sometimes it's very quiet and very focused in there.
Right.
You know?
Yes, I noticed what Montessori talked about when I observed there was that there were times when it got louder and then it was almost silent.
Yeah.
A period of absorption. And then it's a prepared environment, and although there's a great deal of free choice, you have put a lot of energy into preparing the environment. It's not just chaos.
Right.
And that's also really helpful for that age group, because they do need order. And now I was interested in a section that I saw on the values and goals to the community. In other words, once parents and children have been through the process at the co-op, that the values and goals that you're hoping to bring into the community from this process is to provide an opportunity for constructive growth for both the parent and the child, to send the children into the elementary schools ready to participate, to develop an awareness in parents, I love this one, of their responsibility as citizens of the community. Great. To create parents more aware of their importance in the education process. Very, you know, really. And to demonstrate the effectiveness of cooperative action in community affairs. Hear, hear. To foster generosity with families with a monthly food drive. Boy, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed observing there, and how much I really admire what you have done. And I was wondering if you could talk to us a bit about, well, I want to talk a bit about you. One of the things that I very much admire is that you're not a stereotype of a nursery school teacher or a teacher. You like live music. You like to stay up late. you're not the stereotype. And I think that's so important for the parents who are working with you, and for the children. Because we've had that stereotype is just, you know, gone on and on and on, and so it's wonderful. And then the other thing I would like you to talk about is your experience, your travels.
Uh-huh.
Your travels alone, and then your travels with Wade, your son.
I do love to travel, and because of the teaching, I get to do that in the summer. And one of the trips that I had was going to South Africa, and I was able to travel with People to People, and the People to People Citizens Ambassador Program is the whole name of it. And we went to South Africa 4 years after apartheid, and there were five of us, and we were all directors of parent co-op nursery schools. And we spent 2 weeks in South Africa, and we went and visited the informal settlements and met with government officials working with children, and brainstormed and shared ideas and learned a lot from them and gave a lot of ideas about how to keep children involved with their kids. And part of what was happening in the country at that time is the government was giving food to child care places, and these places had like 150 kids in very small rooms, and parents were sending them there so they could get food. So that was one of the things we talked about with the government, is to give the food to the families so they can be at home with their grandparents and other people that were in the home so that they could have a relationship with adults. And so we had those kind of ideas. And then after that, I went off to Zimbabwe on my own to Victoria Falls and spent time there. And I've gone to Fiji before and gone snorkeling. And my brother was in the Peace Corps, so I was with him for a while. And my son, Wade, who's 18, a few years ago, him and I went to Vietnam and Cambodia. And we traveled with a college photography class.
What an education that was for Wade.
It was really wonderful. Wade is my favorite traveling partner, regardless that he's my son, because he's so interested and so friendly, and he's so spontaneous and willing to go see the next, you know, around the next corner and things.
Yes.
So he's a pretty wonderful traveler. Yes, he is. But it was also, there were some great moments in that trip. At one point we were in a museum of war, and there was very large pictures of the Vietnam War on the wall, and that famous picture of the young girl running down the street, and she'd just gotten napalm on her, and Wade was standing looking at this picture, and it was, the photo was blown up about the size of him, and he was standing shoulder to shoulder with a man, a young man same age as him from Vietnam, and it was so amazing to watch how that peace came about and how those two were standing there shoulder to shoulder looking at this powerful picture. And when we walked out of the museum, a man came to shake Wade's hand, or approach Wade, and Wade put out his hand to shake his hand, and the man didn't have an arm up past the elbow, and he'd lost it in the war. And when Wade was younger, he was very afraid of people with, you know, any kind of body parts missing or wheelchairs or anything like that, and Wade reached out and took his arm and shook it and stuff. So, you know, that's the kind of education I love for my kids and experiences. And Wade and I have traveled to Honduras before when he was 11 and went to Copan and up to the Mayan ruins and out snorkeling in the ocean. And we went to Ireland last summer.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was great for his, you know, for his roots.
Yeah. And that was a fun trip because that's one of those trips that I like to land in the country and not know where I'm going, what direction, where I'm going to sleep every night, and you just really set out and have yourself a journey and an adventure and really be able to interact with the people in the country.
Oh.
That's some of my travels.
Oh, it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Maureen, could you give the contact information to the co-op? If people wanted to check out the co-op on the website, they would go to what?
They would go to sthelenacoop.org.
sthelenacoop.org.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've got to go.
Okay.
But I thank you so much. I hope, was it as bad as you, was it okay?
Yes, it was just fine.
Oh, wonderful.
And if anybody would like to come and visit, we do have visitors. The kids are very used to adults in their environment. It's a fun place to observe kids because of that. So
it is a fun place to observe.
Yeah.
It's just remarkable.
And I won't be back there till September, though.
September, right. No one can come till September. That's
right.
what I was going to say. Well, you're not in session now. Oh, it's been so great for me to have you on. It feels a fantasy for me.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And you were wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
It's nice talking to you always.
Okay. Good night, babe.
Good night.
Well, that was Maureen Kelly, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed bringing Maureen to you. I want to talk to you, let's see, as we wind down here. I told you that in August I'm going to report on the Palo Alto award-winning schools and tell you about the homeschooling conference I'm going to. That in September we're going to focus on media literacy, critical thinking skills, and the Alliance for Media Literacy. And then Jonathan Kozol, hopefully in October, bonding in infants and funding. Is it possible with public funds to fund a model school? And I have people to talk to you about that, and yes, it is. And I told you how to send me feedback, hermes@pacific.net. PacificSites.com/TildaHermes, H-E-R-M-E-S, or write to me, Athena, care of KZYX, P.O. Box 1, Philo, California, 95466. If raffle tickets are now available for a new Honda Civic Hybrid, visit our website, kzyx.org, for rules and locations where tickets are sold, or call 895-2324 during business hours. There are only 1,000 tickets available. This is a benefit for KZYX and Z, our listener-supported community radio station that we all love so dearly. So if you can, get there, KZYX, for those raffle tickets. Before I talk more, I want to be sure that I share some of these PSAs with you. On July 4th, Code Pink, a nationwide women's peace group, began a fast to end the war in Iraq and bring the troops home now. Many, many people, some very famous, are fasting with them, and the list is growing. On Sunday, July 23rd, at 4 p.m., the local coastal Code Pink group will hold a vigil on Big River Beach, that's in Mendocino, to send support and prayers for those who are fasting. This event is open to women, men, and children. Those who choose to fast can add their name to the list at the Code Pink website. And a two-evening childbirth class for Spanish speakers helps new parents prepare themselves for childbirth. Topics include nutrition during pregnancy, relaxation, labor and delivery, breastfeeding, and infant safety. To register, call 472-4603. And Sheepdog Show, How They Heard, July 30th in Boonville. Starting at 10 a.m. in front of the Boonville grandstands, these working dogs will have obstacles to prove how important they are to sheep herders' daily chores. Gate charge is $3. Barbecued lamb, chili beans, tossed green salad, and hot rolls follow the dog trails at noon. Lunch will be $15 per dinner. Oh, we shouldn't have told the money. Activities: sheep shearing, youth project members competing in the show ring with their lambs, a cake and pie auction provides for the annual Mendocino Lake Wool Growers Scholarship, a drawing for a wild pig and turkey hunts, spinners and weavers demonstrate handcrafting of raw wool into yarns and clothing items. For more information, contact Eva Johnson, director, or John Harper, secretary, at Mendocino Lake Wool Growers Association, 895-3440. There are some PSAs. Now, what's upcoming on KZYX and Z? Well, Wild Oak Living tomorrow at 9 a.m. Join Johanna for her interview with Winston Cow of Go Beyond Organic. and Anna Lapp, co-author of Grub, Ideas for an Urban Organic Kitchen. And then Friday at 1 p.m., Corporations and Democracies, Tom Wodetsky and Tony Rizzo. That's Friday at 1. And Monday, I know that Joy LeClaire on Women's Voices is going to have a spectacular show. An older woman who's worked in the peace movement and a younger woman who's done a video on for peace. So do check that out on Monday. Well, I think I've given you all the PSAs and the promos and the good vibes that I possibly can. I want to tell you that Education Now was brought to you tonight by our underwriters and underwriting sponsorships, which are available now by calling 895-9617, and by the Mendocino Book Company on School Street in downtown Ukiah. I just don't have enough time to really dig into how art is a container, all of the arts. And we're so lucky here in Mendocino County because there, whether it's music, dance, art, writing, you name it, we have it all here. We are very, very blessed and lucky to be here. I want to wish you all a good evening. At the top of the hour will be Reality Check, and then after that, Dead Show. And coming up will be Earth and Sky. This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, KZYXandZ.org on the World Wide Web. Have a wonderful evening. And now, here's Earth and Sky.